I'm Terry Ray, Elmer, KFI News.
The John and Ken Show, John Cobalt and Ken Shampoo, KFI, AM 640 more, stimulating talk radio. We're going to talk with Ed Royce, Republican congressman, who we have had on many times.
Yeah, from Fullerton area.
And Ed is still fighting for Ramos and Campion to try to get them a pardon from President Bush before Bush's term ends on January 20th.
Yeah, as you know, this is pretty much it for Bush. And earlier this week, the White House did issue a statement that Bush had pardoned 14 and commuted two prison sentences. It was a motley crew of people, a lot of drug offenders. Some of these...
He seemed to be partial to cocaine criminals. Don't know why that was.
Yeah, what was up with that?
Some of these guys.
What do you think?
Cases that went back many years. They're looking for a pardon to sort of erase the crime. But former Border Patrol agents Ramos and Campion have been in prison almost 2 years now. We're not on the list.
And you know, the thing that's hanging over their heads is a 10-year sentence for using a firearm in commission of a crime of violence.
Right. Without that, they'd be done.
They'd already be out of prison for the other violations.
They were just resentenced few weeks ago, but that didn't help.
They were resentenced back to the same amount of time for the gun felony. And again, this was not intended for law enforcement officers to ever be prosecuted with this gun felony charge. It was supposed to be for the bad guys. Let's get Ed Royce on here because he keeps writing letters. Ed, how you doing?
Well, we're doing well, although I must say this word of the commutation of these sentences, including not only embezzlers but bank officers who were embezzling money from their own bank, this is really... amazing when we look at all of the letters. I've sent one to the president that 80 members signed. We had a press conference, Dana Rohrabacher and I and several other members the other day, calling specifically on the president to recognize this case, recognize that murder by manslaughter, you serve less than 4 years in the U.S. And here we have the members of the jury who say, had we known that they were going to impose this mandatory, we wouldn't have convicted. And even the prosecutor, Johnny Sutton, says, had the jury known that we were going to, you know, bring forward this 11-year mandatory minimum on and apply this way, we wouldn't have gotten a conviction. So everyone recognizes, of course, in the country, except perhaps the president, even the prosecutor now, even the drug smuggler says, oh, these sentences really were too harsh. Everybody in the country
but Osvaldo Aldretti Davila said the sentences were too harsh?
Yeah.
He was now in prison. It's
quoted in the paper. he said, well, that was too harsh. But that may be because he has subsequently been arrested another time and now himself faces a mandatory minimum because, as you know, he is a repeat drug smuggler for the cartels. And that's the other aspect of this, as you gentlemen know only too well, that we find most vexing. This individual, while working for the drug cartels, was given a free pass to come in and out of this country as long as he continued to agree to prosecute and testify against these two Border Patrol agents.
Ed, the appeals for Ramos and Campion have gone nowhere. Why do you think that is?
Because I believe the administration at the top level intends not to back down on this. I believe they are that obstinate and that bullheaded, and that's why the pressure has to be just turned up until it's white hot on them. They will not do the right thing out of a sense of justice, so it has to be through pressure and a feeling of embarrassment. And I know of no other alternative or approach that's going to work other than for Congress, for members of the House and the Senate to continually bring this up. I mean, it's the one thing that unites the left and the right in the House of Representatives right now is the sense. I mean, Dianne Feinstein says this is having such a chilling effect on other Border Patrol agents. They're trying to stop the drug cartels on the border. 700 attacks a year on our Border Patrol agents. And in the meantime, they're looking at potentially doing three times as much time in prison if they get in the way of a drug smuggler as somebody who commits murder, who commits manslaughter. You know, they bring somebody up for manslaughter and they get less than 4 years, as I say. So this is, to me, absolutely the most egregious thing, you know, in terms of sentencing that I have seen.
Who are the people who advise Bush on the pardons? Because I don't suspect he's aware of any of these cases himself. I imagine he just cherry picks out of the recommendations from his pardon attorneys.
So, from the pardon attorney, right.
Yeah. And is it one pardon attorney? Is it one man?
Yeah, that's why we wrote Ronald Rogers, who's the pardon attorney of the Office of the Pardon Attorney.
So that's where everything starts?
That is where this process starts. Now, under the Constitution, of course, the president's power to issue these pardons is absolute. It cannot be overruled. And as the White House has pointed out, we don't have the power in the House, although we're trying to. I'm suggesting this as a precedent. The U.S. House of Representatives pardoned some years ago in 1986. They shouldn't have, but they pardoned millions of people here illegally. That's basically what that amnesty was. I'm arguing if we can pardon, you know, that many million illegal aliens, we certainly can pardon two of our Border Patrol agents.
Well, do you have enough Democrats, a majority of Democrats, who would go along with at least a symbolic resolution to pardon Ramos and Compion?
Yeah, we can cobble together with all of the Republicans and enough Democrats who will come over enough votes to do this.
And would you be able to get a vote on the floor? Would Nancy Pelosi allow that?
That's the question that remains. We have in Delahunt chairman of the subcommittee, a Democrat member, Democrat chairman, who's a former prosecutor, who is very sympathetic. I've done several press conferences with him. And as a matter of fact, Congressman Rohrabacher and I have attended some of Dillahunt's hearings where he's looked into this issue. And he's, as a former prosecutor, he's convinced that this is what happened. They went to these two men, and they tried to get them to buckle. Now, I believe it was because the government in Mexico was pressuring about the conduct of our Border Patrol on the border. As you know, they want laxer treatment.
Yeah, but, they're always screaming and pounding their fists.
So they wanted something to be made of these two guys as a symbol.
They wanted an example done somewhere, and originally the government thought they had, they didn't have all the facts, and so our government started this prosecution on these two Border Patrol agents. That's how the process began, and I think. Along the way, the government got more and more embarrassed as they realized who they were dealing with on the other side of this equation. You're dealing with a individual who works for the drug cartel, whose own mother and sister say he doesn't go anywhere without packing heat or carrying a gun in order to defend his load of drugs, and so. As the government gets in deeper and deeper and tries to get a plea bargain agreement, these two guys say no. The reason they said no was because they feel they're innocent. The reason they refused to plea bargain, and this is what the point that Dillahunt makes to me. He says, I know the tactic. He says, I never deployed it, but I've seen it deployed. They were trying to break these two men. Well, you see the situation here. They're convinced they're innocent, so they wouldn't plea bargain. They said, no, we're going to, once the jury knows the evidence. But the evidence was
suppressed.
Suppressed from the jury.
We talked about how the appeals to the Bush administration have gone nowhere. How come the judicial appeals have gone nowhere? To me personally, I'm overwhelmed by this idea that this drug runner. And that second load of drugs that he hauled into the country, that those facts weren't made evident to the jury. I mean, they covered up the second load of drugs that he brought in. This load of drugs has led him to go to prison. The jury would have looked at him in an entirely different light. His credibility would have been shot had the jury known that he was arrested again for running drugs. And I don't understand how that could not lead to some kind of an overturn of the convictions.
And especially when you combine that with the judges overseeing the appeal, they criticize the prosecutor over the charges. You know, just like the rest of us, they think these charges are highly questionable to use something that's never been used like this before.
Why didn't they overturn the conviction then?
I guess they came to the conclusion that even though they disagreed with the deal,
Do judges get phone calls late at night?
I'm I'm waffling here because I don't know the answer to your question.
All right, hang on, because then when we come back, I want to ask you what our listeners can do, because I'm getting a lot of emails from people that want to know if there's anything they can do. Send emails, make phone calls, whatever.
I think
what we're trying to get accomplished, it's doubtful, but it's still not impossible, is to get President Bush to commute the sentences of former Border Patrol agents Ramos and Compion, have been in prison now for almost 2 years. And the sticking point, again, is that one conviction for, commission using a firearm in the commission of a crime, something that's rarely charged against law enforcement people. But these two were convicted of that, and that was a minimum mandatory 10-year sentence.
John and Ken, more with Ed Royce coming up on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
Giving you the straight proof daily. KFI AM 640. We don't cover everything, just everything that matters. KFI News. KFI AM 640.
John and Ken Show, John Cobalt and Ken Champeau on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
Well, the other day there was a press conference involving several U.S. congressmen. Among those, our guest, Congressman Ed Royce, has been on our show many times. The subject was trying to get a commutation of the sentences for former Border Patrol agents Ignacio Ramos and Jose Compion. They have been in prison almost 2 years now. And, of course, the sticking point was that one conviction, the 10-year mandatory minimum sentence for discharging a firearm in the commission of a crime, rarely used, as we know, in the case of law enforcement officials. It's rarely charged.
Ed, we talked about the pardon attorney who's funneling the recommendations to Bush. Ronald Rogers, do you know him, or anybody you know him?
No, I don't know him personally.
Do we know what his temperament is like regarding analyzing these cases?
No, but I know for a fact that the president is aware of this pardon request because we have brought it up with him. And I think what we ought to really make the government aware of also, I've met the family, and they are on very hard times. You know, savings have run out. These men were the breadwinners in their families. There's no pension going forward. And so I think, you know, in a spirit of mercy, the White House really needs to act on this. And if people can contact by phone calls, emails, letters, and if not this president, let's start with President Barack Obama after January 20th. But let's also keep the pressure on members of the Senate and members of the House, because the more they're feeling the awareness from their constituents, then they're going to feel compelled to try to do something.
You have a great legal argument. You have a great mercy argument here. I think, I'm sure this pardon attorney, Ronald Rogers, understands the logic of your arguments here. But we're dealing with George Bush, who I don't get.
Mm-hmm.
He's incomprehensible and impenetrable to me when it comes to these issues. It just seems like blind stubbornness. And it doesn't it doesn't matter what you say. He's got some block about it. And that's it. And that's it forever. And I we've all known people like that. There's nothing you can do with them.
Except ultimately find a way to work around it. And perhaps the way to do that is to force the passage of something in the House and Senate. So if that will be our next act. Could I just bring up this Jamil's Law issue, just because we're running out the clock on the petitions for the city of Los Angeles? I just wanted to make an appeal for anyone on another subject who lives in the city of L.A. If you can download jamilslaw.com off the internet, you could fill out that petition, take it around. If you live in the city of L.A., you can take that petition around, have your neighbors and coworkers in the city sign it, and send that in, and give us a chance to collect these 74,000 signatures that we need in order to overcome Mayor Villaraigosa's sanctuary for gang members policy in the
special
city.
Order 40.
Now, meanwhile, absolutely, where can we direct people if they want to appeal for this commutation of the sentence of Ramos and Compion? What could we post up for them? Should they be contacting the pardon attorney, the White House, who?
I would contact both, the pardon attorney, the White House, and then I would also make certain that you contact the two United States senators here from California and your local representative and ask them, could they personally bring up this issue with the president.
Is there a senator or congressman who's personally close to Bush who would be receptive to this Ramos and Compañ pardon? Is there some insider who can sit down with Bush?
I've talked to the members, Republican members of the Texas delegation. They have brought it up, of course, with the president, as we have. And your earlier remarks about the obstinacy or bullheadedness of the president are ones that they echo back to me.
Really? I mean, yeah, you'd wonder, because you personally have never gotten any response from the executive branch on this attempt that you've made for a couple of years now to get them out.
No letters returning explaining the position, regardless of how many letters we sign. And as I say, we've had 80 members sign one of the letters that I authored as co-signers.
So you don't even get the courtesy of a response?
No.
But there will be another round of pardons and commutations coming when?
That is correct, and that will come just before Christmas and during the holiday season, and that's why ramping up this now makes a lot of sense.
All right,
we're going to get all the information on the website for people to do that.
You also mentioned Jamil's Law. What is the website if people want to download
the petition
for Jamil's Law?
Jamielslaw.com, jamielslaw.com. They can just download the petition right there if they live in the city of Los Angeles.
Okay. We'll put that up on the website as well.
Thank you.
Ed, we'll talk again. We'll continue to urge people between now and Christmas to see if we can break through this brick wall, okay?
Thank you, John. Thanks
again. All right, Ed Royce.
You heard that the family's not doing well. We still have the link on the website. If you scroll down to the right-hand side, you can click under the Ramos and Compañ section, and there is a way that you can contact the Ramos family, contribute to them, send them your best wishes. Whatever you want to do, it's there. It's been there since they went to prison.
Yeah.
So just go look for it.
But it becomes,
and there's the same with Jose Compañ.
It's been up so long, it's part of the wallpaper now. So
I know. I want to mention it every now and then because we can't forget them. We're going to get them out of there somehow.
Maybe we can,
before they rot in there 10 years.
You got any extra money lying around? Obviously, money's tight for everybody, but if you could send a few dollars, maybe make some kind of a Christmas for the Ramos and Compañ children. There are six of them.
All right, when we come back, we'll talk about the terrorist striking in India and what that may be all about.
Yeah, what is this about? Coming up after 6 o'clock, there's
elephants!
There's an idiot councilman who wants to get rid of the elephant exhibit at the Los Angeles Zoo, which is just awful. Just awful and stupid. So we'll continue with that after 6. We'll talk about the terrorist attack in India next. Terry Realmer has the news now. What's going on?
More on the attacks in Mumbai, India. Teams of armed men went at hotels, a restaurant, and other places. As many as 87 people have been killed. 120 have been hurt. The terrorists apparently targeted Westerners.
They wanted anyone with British or American passports. Say anyone who had a British or American passport, they wanted to know.
That man was staying in one of the hotels that was hit. At least 200 people have been hurt in the terrorist attack. Some people are being held hostage. A group called the Deccan Mujahideen has claimed responsibility for the attacks, but it's not clear if they really were behind it. 4 terrorists have been killed, 9 arrested. The White House National Security Council has convened officials from U.S. counterterrorism and intelligence agencies, as well as the Pentagon and State Department, to monitor the situation. White House spokeswoman Dana Perino says that includes the safety and security of Americans. A U.S. counterterrorism official says Islamic extremists are high on the list of likely suspects, which is a chaos has kept anybody from coming up with a quick read on who carried out the attacks and why. More news after we check your traffic.
710 northbound jam from before the 105 freeway all the way to the 5 freeway. And again, the northbound 5 is going to start heavy well before the 55 in Orange County and continue that way into the Newhall Pass. 405 is not that bad, but it is pretty slow from Renaissance Boulevard into Sepulveda Pass. You have a little bit of a break into the valley and then heavy again before Ventura Boulevard on your way up to the 5 freeway. Also, the drive on the 210 freeway remains busy, not only on the eastbound side, which is what you would expect over beyond Citrus, but the westbound side has been very busy from the 605 freeway, now continuing busy into Pasadena. Mike Nolan, KFI in the sky.
KFI News Time is 5:32. President-elect Barack Obama says he's putting together an economic advisory board to help oversee the changes he wants to make. He says it'll be made up of people from all different backgrounds outside government.
Business, labor, academia, and other areas who will bring to bear their wisdom and expertise on the formulation, implementation, and evaluation of my administration's economic recovery plan.
He says former Fed Chairman Paul Volcker will head the board. The Dow is up for the 4th day in a row. That was in spite of 4 government reports out today that said the economy is still bad.
People really don't have high expectations of great economic news.
Seaboard Securities trader Jason Weisberg, that is, says the market turned around after Obama promised he would have a plan to deal with the economic crisis on his first day in office.
The plans that the people in Washington are putting into place, the people that Obama is selecting to take over for the Bush administration, I think these things are much more impactful than the actual numbers that are coming out.
The government reported today unemployment is at recessionary levels. New home sales are at their lowest level in almost 18 years. Consumer spending is way down, and factory orders for big ticket items were down by the biggest amount in 2 years. Southland weather from KFI. Flash flood watch in the burn areas until tonight. Showers and thunderstorms the rest of the day. 60% chance of rain overnight. Lows in the 50s. Partly cloudy Thanksgiving Day with a 30% chance of rain in the morning. It's 57 degrees in Burbank. The Dow is up 247 points. The S&P 500 was up 30. I'm Terry Ray Elmer in the KFI newsroom.
KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio, the John and Ken Show. John Cobalt and Ken Champeau. As if there isn't enough trouble going on, now we got terrorists attacking many sites in Mumbai, India, and reportedly taking hostages, British and American hostages. And nobody knows how many, and nobody knows who these guys are for sure, and nobody knows what they want.
I think the death toll is near 90 now, isn't it, Terry?
We have 82 from the Associated Press, and CNN is saying 87. But they have knocked down the number of people hurt, they think, to 120 from over 200.
Says that gunmen struck 10 different sites in Mumbai across India's financial hub, killing all the people we just talked about, wounding almost 200 others. And apparently, eventually, ending up at a couple of hotels, luxury hotels, one the Taj Mahal Hotel and the other one Hotel Oberoi, and something else called the Colaba Market. And apparently they've taken some hostages there. Now, there were reports earlier that no Americans so far among the casualties, but at least one Japanese man and some Europeans may have been killed by these terrorists.
Now, the witnesses were saying that these terrorists were running up to people looking to see who had British or American passports. And if you had one of those two passports, you just won the reverse lottery.
Yeah, Alex Chamberlain, a British restaurant goer at the Oberoi, said that the attackers singled out Britons and Americans. He said a gunman who looked like he was in his early 20s took 30 or 40 people from the restaurant into a stairway and ordered everyone to put up their hands. They were talking about British and Americans specifically. There was this Italian guy who, you know, said, "Where are you from?" And he said, "I'm from Italy." And they said, "Fine," they let him go. And I thought, fine, they're going to shoot me if they ask me anything. And they didn't. So he survived.
That's probably a good tactic if you travel overseas.
You're not from America.
Yeah. No, I'm not American.
Can you do any Polish?
Huh? You know, it's probably a good idea to learn a few phrases in a foreign language.
Parlez-vous français?
When they start shouting at you, because apparently they were speaking Hindu and Urdu.
Yeah, I don't speak Hindu or Urdu. But I could yell something that vaguely passes for French.
Yeah, I think that's where you have to do not shout in English. Immediately shout in some language that you think they can't speak.
Wing bak tung bak tung bak tink.
If you start yelling English and they recognize it, then
Spadakatina.
You're off to a hostage land here.
Some of the injured were evacuated from one of the hotels on their luggage carts. Waiters in black and white formal wear and chefs were seen leaving the Oberoi. The gunman also attacked a police headquarters. That is the area in South Mumbai where most of the attacks took place. There was a restaurant that was riddled with bullet holes. There were bloodstains on the floor, shoes left by fleeing customers. So this started kind of randomly and now has ended up in a hostage situation.
Now, they have had a number of terrorist attacks over the years.
You don't think of India.
They've had bomb attacks that have killed 700 people over the last 3 years. And it's the Muslims, of course.
The country is 80% Hindu.
14% Muslim. But since there's over a billion people in India.
And it's right next door to Pakistan.
That's over 140 million Muslims. So there's certainly enough troublemakers there to kill 700 people over the last 3 years. And that's what they've done. Since May, there's a militant group, the Indian Mujahideen. They've had a number of blasts that have killed 130 people. They had one in September. Explosions struck a park, crowded shopping areas in New Delhi, the capital, killing 21 people and wounding 100.
They say over the last 3 years, India's been racked by bomb attacks in which 700 people have died, and they blame most of these on Muslim militants who want to destabilize the country.
And this,
it is a huge democracy of a billion people. We had talked to a reporter early in the show. It says, Mumbai, which used to be called Bombay, is always hectic. So you can imagine on a day where shots are being fired and bombs are going off, just how much more hectic things are over there.
March 93 is when the modern round of terrorist attacks started. Muslim underworld figures tied to Pakistani militants carried out a series of bombings on Mumbai's stock exchange, trains, hotels, and gas stations, killed 257 people, wounded more 1,100, and they were trying to avenge the deaths of hundreds of Muslims in religious riots that had swept India. 10 years later, in 2003, 52 people killed in Mumbai. Again, the bombings blamed on Muslim militants. July 07, 7 blasts on railway trains and commuter rail stations killed 187. So this has been going on now for 15 years, periodically. And they've had this violence ever since India was split into India and Pakistan in 1947. The British used to rule the entire region. And then in 1947, it was split into two. And India is mostly Hindu. Pakistan is mostly Muslim. Pakistan and India have a rivalry. There's been a nuclear race. And there's also our relationship with Pakistan. The Pakistani people are largely militant Muslim. They'd have Osama bin Laden as their leader if they could. We, of course, want the Pakistani government to go and help us get bin Laden out of his cave once and for all, because he's hiding at the border of Pakistan and Afghanistan in a lawless region. So, the place is a mess.
Yeah, there are dramatic pictures of this Taj Hotel, which apparently is 5-star. In Mumbai, you can see the top of it burning from some kind of explosion.
Yeah, fire shooting out of it.
It's really kind of a beautiful building, and it's really top-notch hotel. There are reports that there are gunfire has broken out in the hotel lobby. That report came just a short time ago. Police sources tell them that there are 4 or 5 foreign hostages still being held on the 19th floor of that other hotel, the Oberoi. And there was a report that at least 3 top Indian police officers, including the chief of the anti-terror squad, was killed in these attacks. So they did respond to this and apparently have exchanged a lot of gunfire with the militants. And everyone's describing them as young boys, maybe 20 years old, maybe 25 years old, with guns.
It's always the same kind of person over and over again, isn't it?
They got them riled up, right, to be a part of the attack.
They've got one person.
You said they killed 4 of them, right?
No, I didn't get the number of how many terrorists they've killed.
They've killed 4 of them and arrested 9.
And they don't know how many total there may be, though.
No. No, because there's still some of them still on top of the hotels and stuff shooting at the police. It's still in a shootout going on.
The Times of India said that more than 900 people have been sent to the hospitals over this. That's not been confirmed.
No.
You're right. 4 suspects killed by police in 2 incidents when they tried to flee in cars.
And authorities think 7 to 15 foreigners are still in the Taj Mahal.
There's one Japanese man has died, and 9 Europeans may be critical.
One man named Sajjad Karim, apparently some kind of member of a European Union delegation representing England, said via mobile phone, "I was in the lobby of the hotel when gunmen came in and people started running. A gunman just stood there spraying bullets around right next to me. I managed to turn away and I ran into the hotel kitchen, and then we were shunted into a restaurant in the basement. We're now in this dark room and we've barricaded all the doors. It's really bad." And outside the Taj Hotel, injured guests were being stretchered away on the luggage carts.
CNN had a reporter at, I think it was the Taj Hotel, I'm not positive, one of the hotels, and she said that she locked the door and crawled under the bed and stayed there for a couple of hours.
Yee.
That's all
you could do. Supposedly, the attackers used boats to land on an urban peninsula where the attacks took place. While there have been a lot of attacks in India, it says it's rare that they used areas popular with tourists. This seems to be a bit of a change in tactics, called very brazen, they just jumped off of boats and came in firing and eventually grabbed hostages.
Well, if they're specifically grabbing British and American hostages and they were looking for the passports, then they want to make some statement about us.
Now, it says here 2 members of the European Parliament were visiting on a trade delegation. They've remained in hiding in their hotels, making mobile phone calls to television stations describing what's going on. Wow. One guy named Alex Chamberlain, a British citizen who was dining at the Oberoi, said a gunman took 30 to 40 people from the restaurant to a stairway and just said, "All put up your hands," speaking in Hindu.
Then you had the warning from the federal government about the New York City subways. They apparently found there was some memo.
Yeah, it's been a couple of years since one of those warnings went up here.
Yeah,
isn't it?
I know. And it caused hardly a ripple because we've had so many of these warnings. They think it was just in the wishful stages. The aspirational stages was the word they used. But they're issuing the warning anyway that that the New York subways could be attacked sometime during the holidays. Of course, I'm sure virtually everyone in New York is just going to shrug and say, what are you going to do? Because
that's how everybody gets around there, right?
Yeah, because you got millions of people on the subways every day. And what are you going to do? You've got some vague warning that somebody made some kind of a wish or wrote something on a piece of paper or something on a message board that they want to disrupt the subway.
Well, yeah, that Al-Qaeda suicide bombers have been contemplating a holiday season attack. And the FBI calls the an internal memo that AP got hold of from the FBI says it is a plausible but unsubstantiated report that Al-Qaeda terrorists might have discussed the attack in late September.
Plausible but unsubstantiated.
Plausible but unsubstantiated.
Well, that could apply to any plan that or any rumor about a terrorist attack. It's all plausible.
It says that
your typical cover-your-ass.
India has been attacked a lot in the last several months, but some of the attacks may be a Hindu terror network. Great for them. They got two things going on.
Everybody's mad.
Well, didn't Joe Biden say that Obama may be tested early in his presidency?
There you go.
He's not even president yet, but... By the way, I saw a story in one of the... I think it was the New York Times today, that unlike Al Gore, when he became Bill Clinton's vice president, and Dick Cheney, when he became Bush's vice president, it looks like Biden's being kind of shunted to the sideline quickly.
No, because he put him on one of those boards, Ken. Maybe that was
the
reason.
One of those boards.
One of these economic things he just came up with.
He didn't hang around for this press conference this week. He went back to Delaware or whatever just to hang out for Christmas. Apparently he was stuffing stockings at some holiday charity event.
Yeah.
And they're wondering if he's going to have, you know, because...
I don't think so.
Gore and Cheney had big roles in those White Houses.
Yeah, but Gore and Cheney had, both of them had a lot of intellect behind them. Both of them ended up being insane. But
Gore was immediately given technology and the environment as his tasks.
I think
you
can
see what he did with that.
I think Biden's going to be locked in a closet.
All right, the toll-free number is 1-800-520-1GAMF.
On the John and Ken Show on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
The Dane Pearson IV of Truth. KFI AM 640.
More stimulating talk radio. KFI AM 640.
John and Ken Show, John Cobalt and Ken Champeau, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
Hey, we know what we're going to do after 6 o'clock. We're going to talk about elephants. That's right. We're going to talk to the L.A. City Zoo director.
There's a
big controversy going over the pachyderm.
One of the idiot L.A. City councilmen. Who is it? Jose Huizar?
No.
Is that Huizar?
I think it's Tony Cardenas.
Tony Cardenas?
Don't quote me, but I think you're wrong.
We'll find out for sure which one.
I think Ken's right.
It's Cardenas?
Yeah, I saw a news story on this, and I think that's the face I saw.
Well, you know, this one of these schmucks wants to get rid of the elephant.
We've got to get the right schmuck before.
Well, this is going to be up for a vote at the city council. So
yes.
I imagine, Jose Huizar, first of all, is a schmuck. They're all schmucks. And, a lot of these guys are likely to vote the elephant exhibit out of business here. So, we're going to see.
That's the debate. People want to get the elephants out of the zoo. I think they wanted to build a new enclosure. We'll talk about it with the LA Zoo director, get all the details for you after.
God, they can't leave anything alone. Can't leave Thanksgiving alone. They can't leave the elephant exhibit alone.
Oh, yeah, by the way, we're going to celebrate Thanksgiving by playing for you highlights from yesterday's big victory for parents out there in Claremont, beating back the school board, beating back the one lone woman, a UC Riverside professor, who wanted to end the Thanksgiving feast tradition of the kids dressing up in pilgrim and Indian costumes and walking over to each other's schools and having a feast.
So. Made a number of national newscasts yesterday. This really broke through.
It gladdens our heart.
I think the entire nation is against this UC Riverside professor, Michelle Reheja.
It also points out something else. You can email us your story, and sometimes we'll do something for you. Not everybody. We get a lot of crazy stuff, but we can't get involved in everybody's battles.
But
this one was a good one. We grabbed it, went with it, and then the rest of the media glommed on.
But you know what? The people who did the real work are all the parents.
They did.
Who stood with the kids and marched anyway. And that's what I've always said is, like, defy these stupid school officials. They're all cowards. You know, if they see 95% of the school against them, what did they do yesterday? They went and hid. They backed down. They didn't enforce their stupid policy. They're cowards.
All right,
you can make a lot of changes if you just take some action.
The latest we can come up with and how much the federal government has committed to bailouts and rescues. Are you ready? Are you sitting down? $8.5 trillion. That's 60% of the nation's estimated gross domestic product. Well, now, not all of this is money out the door.
No, a lot of it's just theoretical guarantees.
Most of it is loans or loan guarantees, asset purchases or stock investments. And according to one economist, if the economy were to miraculously recover, the taxpayer could make money. That's not my best guess or even a likely scenario, but that's possible.
And if you're wondering where it's coming from, I don't know if you heard yesterday, we interviewed an economic expert, and he said the government is just creating money out of thin air.
You know, $5.5 trillion is coming from the Fed.
Yeah.
$5.5 trillion of that.
The Federal Reserve is just creating money. The term printing money is commonly used. They're not really printing it off a printing press. It works, I guess, the way an ATM would work, or if you wire money to a bank. All, for example, Citigroup woke up probably this morning, and there was suddenly $20 billion sitting in their account on their balance sheet. Where did that come from? The Federal Reserve just created it.
They are not subject to congressional oversight. They're an independent entity.
Right. So they're creating
money. They can lend money to banks or other financial institutions.
And if you're wondering, well, why don't they do that all the time?
Why don't they do it for me?
It's because that drives up inflation dramatically. It's what they do in those banana republic countries in South America. The dictator starts printing money, creating money out of thin air. Well, the more money that's pumped into the system, the less your money is worth.
You mean it's not all backed by gold reserves?
No, it's not.
Not in a long time.
Yeah, and it's amazing. You know, because I wasn't really getting this. But they just make up the money.
They don't actually have the bills. They just say, okay,
you have $20 billion, Citigroup, and go do something with it. It's fascinating, isn't it? Well, you know what? We're out of time.
I know. I had two things, too.
To do with this?
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, the Citigroup thing. John mentioned Citigroup. The money that they're getting is going to go to the New York Mets' new stadium because they're going to pay $400 million for naming rights in the new ballpark.
Yeah, how wacky is that, huh? $400 million to name a stadium of our tax money.
Two New York City Council members say the stadium ought to be called City Taxpayer Field.
I think it should be called Bailout Field. I think it's a great name for it. That's ridiculous.
That's the one thing. And the other thing is that I know Schwarzenegger's here working on the economy in California, but Obama's called all the country's governors to Washington on Tuesday.
Yeah, he'll help. Yeah, bring Schwarzenegger. Hey, raise the sales taxes.
Raise taxes.
Oh, you mean there's no federal sales taxes? Oh, well.
But you know who else will be there?
Who?
Sarah Palin.
Jesus. Good one, Terry Wright. Oh, another photo op.
That's right.
Maybe there'll be a turkey in the background. Getting slaughtered.
She is a plague. She's a sign of the apocalypse.
All right, we are going to talk about animals when we come back, but it's elephants at the L.A. Zoo. You hear the latest.
Terry Elmer has the news now on the John and Ken Show on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
Wednesday, November 26th.
Now, we join the Handle on the News team at Thanksgiving dinner.
I just want to thank you all for joining me for Thanksgiving dinner. And, oh, yeah.